The Pathology of Graphology by David Milnes. Read by David Milnes. All rights reserved. The Pathology of Graphology. Chapter 1. When Jeff Osmar woke up in the morning, every morning, without fail, he did not want to live. He got out of bed and dressed himself and walked to work for nothing more than a bacon sandwich and a cup of tea. His job, polishing and valeting cars on the shabbier forecourts of Stoke Newington, Islington and Holloway, took him on a circuit where several cafes offered breakfast for less than £2. No matter which cafe, there was always gristle in the bacon, but it was the sandwich rather than the tea that separated him from suicide. His friends, men in pubs, ignored or talked down his despair, or were too bored by it to be of any help. They wrote off his suicidal threats as piss talk. But they were wrong, those friends. For the last few months, every night towards closing time, when he came back from the bar with his Guinness, Jeff's features had been locked in an open secret. Booze offered neither euphoria nor the maudlin mood any more. He drank only to put himself out, off, under. And in the morning his hangovers dragged him out of bed to the toilet, and along his trammelled routes to work, to the comfort of that pot of tea and bacon sandwich, then on to the freezing bucket and chamois, 6 days a week, and he worked Sundays to death as well, given half the chance. Recently, the idea of doing something rash, reckless, even criminal, before he checked out, as he liked to put it in his more romantic moods, had acquired an allure. But he had no idea yet what kind of criminal he might become. He had never broken the law in his life. Back in the mid-70s, 20 years before the story takes place, when it started out as a semi-skilled man, a shuttering carpenter, earning a good wage on North London's development sites, there had been plenty of crime. Heavy crime and light-fingered crime, going on all around him. It was the way of life back then. But he took no part in it. Not because he was scared or above it all, but simply because he was having too much fun. He looked back upon those years as golden now, when he was a known face in all North London's live music pubs, such as the Hope and Anchor in Islington, or the notoriously violent Three Crowns, or Broken Crowns, in Stoke Newington. He blamed the downturn in the building cycle for his sackings from various sites, rather than his lunchtime sessions and his terminal unreliability. In the '80s he'd slipped to unskilled work, hospital porter, hotel porter, warehouse packer, and in the '90s he'd fallen into the grasping, grubby hands of the cleaning agencies. Women liked him. But they weren't any help either, because their affections were always skin-deep. They liked the gentle curves of his face, and the long ovals of his brown eyes, set rather wide apart, and they liked to touch his hair, cut in a neat brown, curly mat, finishing square in the neck. They liked his body, which all his walking and labouring had kept in good shape. And though they never said as much, they liked to be seen out with him. Put a pair of reflecting sunglasses on Jeff Osmar, and a police uniform, sit him on a Harley-Davidson, and he could have been a TV cop of yesteryear, Hawaii 5-0, or Charlie's Angels. But his part would only have been that of some attendant officer, a one-liner part. "That's a ticket, ma'am." "Pull over, sir." "Give me backup." "Let him have it." "Let's get the hell out of here." But there was one aspect of his appearance no woman liked at all. His moustache was a rich tobacco-gold affair with lighter flecks in it, but it was too stiff, too rounded and bulbous, almost a walrus moustache from the '60s. Thick curls of it strayed over his lip and brushed the creamy head of his Guinness. "Sucked on it," he was fond of saying. When he lewdly repeated that joke, pint after pint, his girlfriends grew bored and disgusted, but he wouldn't shave off his moustache for any of them. He'd had it since youth, when it had been part
Sample complete. Ready to continue?